This is Seattle, Washington. Our first Friday home after our memorable trip to California. April 10th, 1964. Now let us all go deep within our hearts and feel the glory of the presence of the living God, whose temple this is. Let us feel our oneness with our Father. Let us feel His great love for us as it pours upon us constantly, always searching for that which should return to it. Let us fix our full attention upon Him, and let us pray to Him. O Heavenly Father,
O Heavenly Father,
Divine Mother,
Divine Mother,
Beloved Jesus Christ,
Beloved Jesus Christ,
Blessed Master,
Blessed Master,
Saints and Sages of all religions,
Saints and Sages of all religions,
I bow to all of you.
I bow to all of you.
Free my life from all obstacles.
Free my life from all obstacles.
And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development.
And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development.
Make my mind thy temple.
Make my mind thy temple.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my love thy home.
Make my love thy home.
Be thou the only King.
Be thou the only King.
Reigning on the throne of my consciousness.
Reigning on the throne of my consciousness.
Silent witness. Look at it as something that's happening not to you, but to somebody else, just like you would view a person acting a part on a screen. It isn't nearly as serious as you think. Really, it isn't. If we would get our minds off of ourselves, if we would stop feeling sorry for ourselves, and get our minds on God where they're supposed to be, we wouldn't have half the troubles that we have now. This is the truth. We've had one of the most wonderful experiences in the world. Now that sounds funny, doesn't it, when you all know how very ill Father has been. I don't know whether you know truly how serious it has been, but he made medical history. It was so serious that the doctor wrote a paper on him and presented it before a group of medical men down south. And the fact that he is here at all, in view of what it says on that paper, is a never-ending miracle. And I think he has been absolutely magnificent in following what we teach, what we have been taught. There's been not one word of complaint out of him. He's been happy, he's been laughing, and he's been bolstering other people's spirits up when he should be the one to be comforted. And because of this, he is the living example of what it means to put your faith in God. And if you will do that, God will see you through. There is no question of a doubt about it. It is wonderful. We want to thank all of you for all of your prayers. I know that they've helped greatly. You know, it was quite a challenge to me, because I sit and tell all the rest of you what you should do, you know, when you come to me with your problems. It's so easy to tell somebody else when they have problems what they should be doing. But to have one yourself that seems insurmountable, and to be faced with it, and decide what you're going to do about it, I found out was something else. At first I got a little panicky. I wanted to hover over Father because I was afraid I wasn't going to have him with me, you know, more than an hour or so. And then I took myself sternly in hand and I made myself go to a show one evening. Well, I'd been there about 10 minutes, and I thought, this is absolutely no good. I should be right there with him. What if he needs me? Of course, I'd left him in good hands, but what if he needs me and I'm not there? And this was a test. And so I thought, well, if I have been preaching all of these years about what to do, then I'd better live up to it. So I went inside of myself, I fixed my mind upon God, and I said, Father, he is thy child. You must take care of him. And I'm going to sit here and prove that I have the strength of endurance that I have tried to teach other people to have. And finally, the whole thing went from my mind. I sat there and enjoyed the show, got home, and Father was just fine. As fine as he could be with mumps hanging down to here. And we have a picture that we're going to have made up so that you can see it in something other than a slide. You'll never see anything like it again. He had his pajamas on, his bathrobe over it, plaid scarf tied up around his head to hold the mumps up because they were so heavy. And then to crown it off, I just for the fun of it, he put a hat on top of his head and he sat there like this. He is the most woebegone spectacle that ever was. But it was wonderful that he could be that way, because he was flat on his back for 3 weeks, and then it has taken us from then to until now to get back home in easy stages. But we feel so fortunate to be here, believe me. It's been wonderful. It's been a wonderful trip. And strangely enough, in spite of all of these tests and trials and tribulations, we managed to meet every single commitment that we had planned on meeting before we left here. And we had some tremendous experiences in God. We went to Arizona and had a friend who was absolutely terrific in God. Faye knows about this. And this woman is like a child. I have never seen anything like her. Her little house, which is very humble, was absolutely spotless. And for the one day that we could be there, her love for God in this was so great that she had painted the whole inside of the house. She had painted the back part so Marge and Kenneth could stay in that. Anything and everything that she could do for our comfort was there in all of its beauty. But the greatest beauty of all was in her face. This childlike soul that came out just grabbed me. Oh, Mother, she said, to think after 10 years you have come in answer to my prayers. And then she did the same thing with Kenneth, blessed him for bringing us there, and she had never seen him before in her life. And she's just like a child. And we really knew what it meant when it said in the Bible that you must be like a little child in order to enter the kingdom of heaven, because this woman was that in every sense of the word. She was the most beautiful soul. And we had the most wonderful day, and she showed me some things which she had never shown anyone else that she had received in her meditation. And she said that she was having such difficulties because she was all alone in this place up in Miami, Arizona, with no one to talk to about God, no place to go, no place to worship with anyone else who believed as she did, and how terrible it was. And she had fallen in an effort to try to save her husband, who has had a couple of strokes and was very crippled. She had tried to save him from falling. She'd injured her arm. She hadn't been able to work. Yet, strangely enough, God had taken care of her, and she had been paid wages. She works as a servant in a guest house at the Inspiration Mine up there. And I pointed out to her how wonderfully God had blessed her. Because if she didn't have anyone else to talk to, she had only him to talk to. She had no other sanctuary but the sanctuary of her own soul. You know, we don't realize how fortunate we are sometimes in the fellowship that we have with one another and the love that we can give to one another. And to see this woman alone like this, and to see how wonderfully she had developed in God, was really an inspiration and a revelation. And I pointed out to her that each and every one of us ask for God realization. We say we want this with all of our hearts and souls. And yet, when God sends to us the trials, the tribulations, the necessary things to strip us of all that is impure and take us to Himself, we do nothing but cry about it. Nothing. We don't realize that in the very trials which He sends, the very tests which He sends, that this purifying process is going on. That in truth, as we meet each test which comes, we are building our strength, if we will. That we are building within ourselves the power of overcoming. The difficulty is that we don't mean what we say when we say we want God, because our mind is centered either in our little self or in the things of the world. We're not willing to go all the way. We're not willing to go the way of the cross and the crucifixion. You know, it is something to be crucified, because it means that the ego, every shred of it, must be crucified. And in order that we truly become the disciple of God, we have to measure up. It is not God who is constantly needed to pour His blessings upon us. This He does without asking. It is we who should gear ourselves, gird ourselves for battle, so to speak, and measure up to what is expected of us if we would have this great light within our own souls. We are such weaklings, all of us. We do nothing but cry about every little thing, center all of our attention upon ourselves. We use whoever comes to teach many times for nothing but a dumping ground for problems, when that one comes to give the living truth of God which they have experienced within their own being. I did the same thing myself. I remember so many times that I went to Master with my problems and I thought they were terrible. Maybe they were and maybe they weren't, but to me they were. And I spent years in doing this, asking for His help. And I think back on it now and I think, if I only had another chance, I would ask Him for the truth of God which was so greatly within Him, that He wanted to pour out to all who would receive so abundantly. And yet how few really came for that. All they did was to pour out their own problems and then to criticize because things didn't turn out the way they felt they wanted them to. Now we have to make up our minds whether we want to be human or divine. And if we want to be divine, we have to pay the price for that divinity. It is a pearl of great price, and it is not bought for one farthing less than the price of full and absolute and complete surrender to God. But what a tremendous thing it is to surrender to God, because then you have no problems, God has them all. Somebody made the statement to me when I was going into a place, well, you're certainly going to meet a lot of problems here. Just, it's a terrific situation. I said, I don't have any problems. I'm not going to meet any at all. They're God's children. That's His problems. I'm not going to worry. I am here to speak about God, to teach about God. And those that really want to learn will listen to these words as He speaks them through this channel. I of myself am nothing. It is my Father who doeth the works. Who knows at what state of development anyone is? There was an interesting article in one of the Vision magazines, conversation between Papa and one of the devotees. And Papa was asked, what was the difference, if any, between a God-realized soul and a saint? And Papa said there was a difference. He said a saint was greater than a God-realized soul, that a God-realized soul was not always a saint. And the devotee says, in what way? Papa says, in every way. The devotee says, for instance, and Papa says, in every instance. And it sounds typically like Papa. This is the way he'd go, back and forth like this all the time. There are many levels of consciousness, many planes of consciousness, and only God knows where each of us is. You can recognize a saint, Papa said, only through what you feel in your heart. He cannot be described, and lucky are any of us if we have come before such a one. I feel so greatly blessed that God has brought me before not one, but more than one in my lifetime. And that His grace has poured through me. It is like Papa again said, that the sun represents God, and it shines eternally. It does not discriminate at all on the ones that it shines. And where there is the sun, there is no darkness. But if we, as His children, choose to close our eyes and make our own darkness, this is not God's will for us. It is our own will. It is really something to differentiate, you see, between the divine and the human. In the universal sense, God is equally present everywhere. God created everything. There is nothing here but God's creation. Everything emanated from Him. We also, in all levels of our creation, since the first infinitesimal atom of consciousness, where we could feel ourselves as being, the I-ness, but as separate unto ourselves, individual. And we went through every single plane of consciousness. I have seen it within myself. And recently I read a book which said almost identically every single word that I had experienced in vision of the evolution of man from that one infinitesimal speck of consciousness until his oneness with the divine within himself. It was really a revelation to see this. And I mentioned this fact at one of the places where we were, and someone said to me, well, how comforting that must be for you. I said, how comforting that must be. I said, for which one of us? And she looked at me and she said, I see what you mean. You see, people are so apt to look down on the Westerner, to think that the Westerner can never attain the wisdom of the East, that we in the West can never attain the God realization which is accredited to the Eastern masters. And yet, in every detail of experience which that book put forth as coming from a recognized God realized master, I had experienced that same thing. Only I had gone one step further, as he described my own experience, as I remember myself just floating in space as an atom of consciousness. It was like in a purple mist. And then many years later, this picture was taken up. And you feel yourself a part of the earth and all of the elements in it. And out of the earth, sustenance comes, you see, and formation comes in rock form. And then the consciousness goes through all of that and becomes crystallized. And from that we have precious jewels, precious metals, the highest of that particular plane, don't you see? The next kingdom is the vegetable kingdom. And for the first time we have actual growth. You see, the rock, the earth seems to be inanimate. But we have actual growth from the earth. And we have the vegetable kingdom. And the vegetable kingdom feeds from the minerals on the earth. This was not brought forth in the book, that each level that you attain feeds upon the other levels that have gone before. And you take with you, after you have completed the evolution of every particular thing there is on that particular plane, you take with you into the next plane of consciousness the impression of your last form in the last kingdom, you see? And that must be worked out karmically on whatever plane there is. And so you find the vegetable kingdom feeding on the earth. And next comes the insect kingdom. And we know that the insects feed on the vegetables, don't they? Some of them fly, some of them just go along the earth. And we go through every single form of that. You see this, you see, as God shows it to you. And your consciousness goes through that. And the next kingdom is the fish kingdom. Fish kingdom. And we know that we go fishing and we give the fish worms, don't we? And they also feed on vegetation, you see, and many of these other things. And the next kingdom is the bird kingdom. And the bird dips into the ocean and picks fish up, and it also feeds on the vegetation and the worms of the earth. And then we have the animal kingdom. And you go through every single form in the animal kingdom, and each time you leave one kingdom, you take with you the impression of what you were in that former kingdom, and it must be worked out. And so then we come to the kingdom of man. And man has dominion over all of the other kingdoms, you see. And he has taken with him, in his first evolution, as a human being, the consciousness of himself as an animal. And he has and puts forth many of the animal tendencies that have gone to make up his being before. And man holds within himself all, everything of all of these planes of consciousness. And man looks to all things of the kingdoms for his sustenance. But man is born something special because he alone has the power of consciousness and of concentration to go to God. And as he evolves into higher and higher levels of human consciousness, he recognizes this fact. And eventually his devotion for God becomes so great that he is willing to give up himself and everything he possesses and lay it at the feet of God, because he knows now that only was he happy when he had this union with God, this oneness with God. And then he starts to make the effort, and at last his worship, his adoration, his devotion for God is so great that he is willing even to undergo the state called death. Now, because of Christian history, many people make martyrs of themselves in the sense of offering themselves as a human sacrifice and going through the physical death. But there are always two meanings to everything in the Bible. There is the historical meaning, the exoteric meaning, that which is without. And there is the inner, the spiritual meaning, that which is within. And it is this inner meaning that we are concerned with, because this world that we live in is the sum total of everything that has emanated from us as human beings. If we don't like these tidal waves, if we don't like these earthquakes, if we don't like nation fighting against nation, if we don't like politics as they are today, if we don't like the way our neighbors treat us, or the jobs that we have, or anything else, we have created this ourselves. It is a sum total of the vibratory thought force and the speech force and the action force that has gone forth from us as human beings en masse. And this is the result. This is the karmic pattern. There can be no doubt about it. So if we ever want it to change, and it's getting awfully late, we had better change ourselves. We'd better make up our minds what we want to be, whether we want to be Christian soldiers of God, going forth in all of our purity, our knowledge, our power of truth, becoming that first, and then spreading that influence throughout the world, or whether we're going to continue to hang on to these little human pleasures, the things that take up so much of our time and get us absolutely nowhere. Look back on our lives this past year, just say. Look at all the things that we have done. How much nearer have we come to our goal, which is God? How much nearer have the things that we've done, the people that we have associated with, brought us closer to God? How much? What effort has been made? We live in fear. Fear of what? Fear of what the other person thinks? Fear of what somebody is going to do to us? Fear that the world is going to come to an end? Fear that a deluge will come to us, that we will have an earthquake? All of this, we have brought this upon ourselves. Because whatever we think about, we give power to. And we live in fear today. And nobody has the courage to stand up and do something about it. Because first, you must go to God. Seek ye first the God and his kingdom, and then all of the things that you want automatically come to you. It's remarkable the way God is within us, how he fills us with his light, surrounds us with his light, walks before us spreading his light, and we are so blind that we cannot see it. Instead, we sit around and cry in sorrow because our little ego is hurt, it's punished. And when the guru comes and tries to deliver the necessary discipline in order to strengthen the soul and to take away the human in order that the divine may come, these people sometimes cry louder than others. And others say, do anything to me, only take me to him. Take me to him. Each one has to go within the sanctuary of his own soul and decide under which category he or she comes. I read an article not long ago where it said that half the beds in the hospitals in the United States today are filled with mental patients. Why? Why? It is because they have gone within and have dwelt upon the little self instead of their great self, which is God. They feel too sorry for themselves. If we would practice what the divine masters of all ages have taught us, that of loving, of serving. As Jesus said, a new commandment I give unto ye, that ye shall love one another as I have loved you. How great was his love for us? His love for us was so great that he gave his very life, the human ego, as the example of what must be done in order that the divine within every man be born. It has to happen. You have to make a choice. And it is now. Look around you at the things that are happening today. We don't have to wait for the things in the Bible to come to pass 10 years, 100 years, 1,000 years from now. We're in the midst of it. This is the battle of Armageddon. We're in it, both inside of ourselves and out, because don't forget that nothing happens outside, but first it happens in here. And nation within ourselves is fighting against nation. Kings are fighting against kings. We are judging, we are being judged. And this is not a simple process. And if any of you are having trouble or have been having trouble, it's because this is what God is putting us through. And make no mistake about it, it's a spiritual experience. But the human in us suffers. And if you want to feel that you are mentally unbalanced because of what God is giving to you, then you will be. Because you're writing your own destiny with your own hand. But don't let yourself go. You are a child of God, every single one of you, as I am too. We're entitled to his protection. And if we hang on to him and think of all of the wonder and the beauty that is within him, that he is willing and ready to pour down us, instead of thinking about all of the woes which we don't want, he would lift us up. He would heal us, because to God all things are possible. To him nothing is impossible, not one single thing. The Father is here. It's great proof. Believe me, it's wonderful. And God has worked many miracles in our lives, and he'll continue to do so if we let him. But let us let go of these negative thoughts. Let us quit voicing them. And let us think only that which we want to see manifested in our lives. We can change our lives. We have that power. Because this moment now is eternity. And if we will live this moment in our full consciousness of him, all of the tomorrows will gradually straighten themselves out, because you're going to build a new thought in your life, a new power in your life. And you must have love and sympathy for the creatures of all kingdoms. They're all of God, every one of them. Remember another thing that the Christ said, which is absolutely true. Whatsoever ye have done to the least of these, ye have done unto me. So let us think of what we do to one another and to all of the creatures of God's kingdom. They are all his, a part of his very self. When you think of yourself as separate from God, so you are. But if you will go within and meditate and become one with your Father, feel this wonderful, this glorious, this radiant presence within you, you will feel your oneness, and then you will see His hand working everywhere. There was an article in Ananda Moy Ma's magazine just recently that spoke about music. And it said that music that came from the soul was the one of the most wonderful ways of things of taking us to God. And it described it in a wonderful way. It said that it was like the voices of angels mixing with the demonic force, which also strove so desperately hard to do its part so that the music of the universe would work in harmony, because they are twins, don't you see? And as God spoke the word, as He vibrated forth from Himself, the music of the spheres came into play. And as we grow into ever higher levels of consciousness, this beautiful spiritual music, such as Barbara sings for us, enters our souls and lifts us up. It makes you want to cry, because it makes you want to worship God. And that's why we are here. That's why we are here. One of the students to whom I had given Kriya initiation said to me on our journey, "Mother, when are you going to give me the second initiation?" I said, "Have you learned yet to meditate, to control your mind?" "No, I'm having great trouble." I said, "You haven't even learned the art of meditation, and you're asking me for the second Kriya initiation? Isn't that rather ridiculous?" "Well, I have such terrible troubles with all of these techniques." I said, "Well, if you are having trouble with this," I said, "just fix your mind upon God. Love Him, worship Him, adore Him. Take His name. Keep it forever upon your tongue, as Papa says. Each one has his own path, his own way to God. And it is different than every other one, just as each hair on your head is different from every other hair. But you must make the effort. You must let no one, nothing, stop you from going to God, your Father. This is your test when it comes. And you must meet it. You must be a witness for the Christ. You must be. The time is here. This battle is here. It's within us and it's outside of us. And it's up to each individual what they're going to do with it and how they're going to come through it. Our little human problems and sufferings are minor compared to the glory of God. And they are given to us through God's grace and His mercy in order that the testing might come, the growing might come, and the purifying might come. Because even the seed has a shell when it is planted in the ground, and it must break that shell in order that it might grow. And every time you break something, it's painful, because all growth is painful. It's expansion. It's like the mother carrying a child in her womb. In the beginning, particularly with the first child, as her body expands in a way that it never has before, we have what we call growing pains. And yet what a blessed experience that is. How wonderful to feel this life within you, take life, and movement come, and know that this is a precious little one that is being given to you by the Father. That you have given a soul that is waiting for rebirth an opportunity for that rebirth so that he can get closer to God. And something happens inside of you. A mother takes on a beauty, I think, that well, there's no other beauty like it. It's an experience like no other experience. We know this is true. Some cannot have children, this is true. But we can always have spiritual children. And if we cannot have a child of our own, then certainly there is one thing which is above all others, and that is to have the birth of the Christ child within our consciousness, to manifest that glory. And if we do that, we will have children all over the earth. How many call you mother and father when you reach this state of spiritual consciousness? The spiritual family is always greater than the human family. The guru comes to offer you that blessed privilege. And yet there are many who want to cling to the human, who want that from the guru instead of that which is the divine. You meet it many times. And the understanding is not there. that something greater is being offered, and they choose the lesser. Why? Why? You ask yourself. Many terrific things happened. We attended one meeting, which was, they were not students of ours, but we attended this meeting, and it sounded like Grand Central Station as we sat there. Father and I sat there first, meditating, and one by one they came in. There was quite a crowd. And everybody was talking at the top of their voices. It seemed as though everyone was trying to outdo everyone else. And I sat there, and naturally I compared them with our group here. Usually everyone comes in quietly. Sometimes there's a little conversation, but many times everyone sits in silent meditation, as should be done, and communes with God. And in the midst of all of this, Father and I were meditating, and one young boy sat right in the center of the floor like this. And he was immovable. And how he managed to concentrate his mind in the midst of all of this bedlam, we would never know. Well, what was said was a sincere effort to help the people. And yet it seemed that no specific direction was being given to them. And then there was another speaker, and this speaker talked about two types of meditation. One was subjective, one was dynamic, and that we should follow that dynamic route of meditation because that was creative. And then from there, Father spoke, and he gave a very wonderful talk. And the essence of his talk was this, that before you can meditate, before you can go to God, before you can put your feet on the spiritual path in any sense of the word, you have to have the complete and absolute desire to do it. And until you have that desire, nobody is going to come along and touch you on the shoulder with a magic wand and give you what you want for nothing. It doesn't come that way. Because don't forget that we on this path are following the way of the cross and the Christ. And it means exactly what it says. Because you cross every single thing that happened as you went away from God. And as you try to work your way back, it's just like swimming against a current upstream. And it's difficult. But if we want to reach our goal badly enough, it becomes a challenge and not a burden. A blessed privilege, not a problem. And we count our blessings every day for this. Our blessings every day. That God is so gracious to us. That he gives us these tests. But as he gives them to us, does he not give us the strength also to bear them? We have some new students down in San Diego area from the university down there. And one little one is the cutest thing you ever saw. With a little button nose that I couldn't possibly imagine it not having a shine. Friday night before we left Garden Grove, they drove up from San Diego and they stayed till after 12 o'clock. And they all sat at my feet. And to see these youngsters in the university so filled with love for God, desire for God, was truly a wonderful thing to behold. And they would have stayed there all night if possible. They came bearing a big bunch of white carnations that they'd all gone together to buy us. And it was truly a marvelous experience to see them. And they were so filled with this love of God. You know what they say, that many times your heart overflows and you cry when you love God so greatly. And almost every one of them had that experience that evening. How wonderful it was. How wonderful. And there are two of them who are going to be married. And I must tell you about this because it's so unusual. They said that when they parted with each other at night, that instead of the usual embrace, that they kissed each other at the Christ Center and gave each other their blessings of God to each other. How wonderful. Now these are souls, I tell you. It's wonderful to witness such a thing, to be privileged to see it. But every place we went, there was a wonderful experience. And that blessed Marge and Jean, how wonderful they were to us. How wonderful. And you see, whenever you have a need, God takes care of you. So if you will just put your full attention upon Him, you will love Him, you will worship Him, you will adore Him, and you will serve Him. And you will have the courage to stand for the things that you believe in, and to do the things that you know you should do in God. His reward will come to you beyond any measure of which you can conceive. I can't do it for you. I can only inspire you to seek that which is within yourself. This is the function of every teacher. God is within you. He can only be found there. There was such a wonderful thing written by Vida Reed Stone. I hope it's in this magazine. No one can really teach another, for the teacher is within all men. God within you, the Christ within you, is your teacher. Yet love can assist in the awakening process as sunlight stirs the life that slumbers within the seeds. Isn't that a beautiful thing? And here are the requirements. Qualifications of a disciple. The aspirant should be pure of soul, free from desire. He should have a keen awareness of the futility of leading the ordinary animal life. He must be strong of body and mind, well-wisher of all, devoted to the parents. He must have control over the senses and be free from delusion and vanity. He must have discrimination, deep thought, gratitude, freedom from poverty of mind. He must have a constant urge for liberation from the human bonds into the freedom of the infinite. He must have a strong will to persist in the face of obstacles, a central sincerity to the ideal that is chosen, to the guru who is resorted to, and to the sadhana shakti that is involved and set active in himself. Once the sincerity is there in a sufficient measure, the rest is assured, whatever the shortcomings of the aspirant. So equipped, the seeker approaches the guru. Would you kindly explain to me the guru's method of selecting the disciples and the process of initiating them? The master. When the aspirant approaches the guru in humility of mind and ardor of the soul, the latter receives him and puts him through a period of observation, during which he satisfies himself regarding the competence of the novice for the higher calling. He sees not merely the outer personality, but studies also the inner nature, the type of the soul, and the kind of development already undergone, and the direction in which further growth is to be promoted, and also whether there is the needed affinity of being between himself and the novice. Once that is done, he decides upon the nature of the discipline that is best suited to the aspirant and proceeds to instruct accordingly. Whatever the path chosen and the discipline selected for the seeker, no real sadhana begins till a relation is established between the guru and the shishka. And this relation starts from the moment an inner connection is made between the two as a result of something from the consciousness of the guru entering the being of the disciple. This entry of the guru into the disciple is aptly described as the impact or descent of the higher power, the conscious power of the guru of the divine through him. Where this descent of the higher power is not, says the Shastra, there is no fulfillment. The means of effecting this transmission of consciousness is called initiation, diksha. Diksha is what gives union with the divine and sunders the knots that bind. It must be noted that to the seers of the Tantra, the guru is not just the human personality that bears the name. In truth, the real guru is not visible to the physical eye at all. He is the eternal guru, or God, who rules the whole domain. It is this guru that is concentrated upon and invoked by the human guru, first in himself, and then communicated in his power to the disciple. Thus it is the divine who is present and active in the person of the human guru that is transmitted and implanted in the being of the disciple. The human guru is only the channel, the representative of the divine. The disciple is enjoined to keep this fact in mind and to have utter devotion to him as to the divine. It is this fact of the divine behind the guru and the faith of the disciple in the guru as the divine that are of cardinal importance. It must always be remembered that you are not to worship the individual, the person, the individuality, the personality, but God flowing through that one and through you and through everyone in creation. We saw evidence of quite the contrary when we visited the centers down south. And we saw a form being worshipped as God. This is not right. The Master comes not to take you to himself, but to God within yourself. And you do him or her a terrific injustice if you act in any other way or feel in any other way. We must love one another. It is love that will change the world. Let us gear ourselves. And from this moment forward, overcome all of this thought of the little self. Set your goal on the highest there is, and find within yourself the strength of the divine that will take you there. If techniques bother you, then think only of God. Forget the techniques if they take your mind from him. They are a means to help you to concentrate, to make your mind silent, to take you into the silence of your own soul. But if you can do that by repeating his name, then for goodness sakes, do it. But think only of him. Dedicate all thoughts, all words, all actions to him alone. And then find the glory which will manifest itself in your life. It will happen. I beg of you, do this. I can't do it for you. Nobody else can. Only God within you. Stop wasting time. Get busy. And go to him.
Oh, Heavenly Father,
Divine Mother,
I feel the wonder and the beauty
of thy glorious presence
in every part of my being.
My heart is bursting with my love for thee. I kneel in adoration at thy feet. And surrender myself to thee. I feel the power of thy perfection. Surging in every cell of my body.
My mind and my intelligence
are radiant with thy healing light. My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss. Of my communion with thee. I and my Father are one. Blessed Spirit, I am He. O Heavenly Father. May thy love shine forever. Upon the sanctuary of my devotion. May I be able to awaken all hearts with my own.
And
bring them to thee.
Oh.